This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ladies and gentlemen, the show is about to start in 10. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
He'll be fine on the mountain.
It's time for Inside the Gamecock, the show. Built by the Barn Dominium Company, served by Chicken Cock Whiskey, and part of the Chief Sports Network.
Touchdown, Carolina! Touchdown, Ace Sanders!
Pressure! And he just dives in! Notice! Notice! Notice!
J.C. Sherbert, Noel Mullinax, and Jamie Bradford.
All right, greetings and good morning. Welcome aboard and welcome home. Inside the Gamecocks, the show, live from the Signorama Studios. Signorama.com, the preferred sign partner of your South Carolina Gamecocks, located in West Columbia. Signorama is Gamecock-owned, Gamecock-operated. Hi, Matt, if you're watching. If not, hi, Matt, later, because we know that he listens even when he misses it live. Matt Vaughn is the owner. He's just an awesome dude. And his son's a bat boy for Carolina baseball. Hopefully he's a good luck charm if he's going to be out on the diamond this weekend as Carolina welcomes the third-ranked Texas A&M Aggies to town at Founders Park. Mike Morgan will be along here in just a moment and throughout the rest of the program as well. We will be joined today by Derek Scott, the voice of Carolina baseball and basketball at noon. We'll talk to him about this series, but also the Final Four. Alabama is in it. He clearly had a front row seat, literally, in Tuscaloosa this year as the Tide trounced the Gamecocks 74-47. Can they win this whole thing, guys? Can Alabama win the national championship? They're being written off by most because UConn is in there and Purdue's in there. We'll talk about that. Anxious to get Mike's thoughts on it as well. Also, how about this? I got a question for all you gurus, you three. All right, Mr. where everybody knows your name. All right, Schubert. All right, Mad Dog Mustache, Mad Dog Mustache.
Making my way in the world today.
And Mike with his good look. You know, only real men wear pink, right? All right, so here's the thing. If you could pick one, you're muted, Mike. He had a rebuttal, but we missed it. Hold on. Everybody, wait a second. There you
only
go.
Only a tanned morgue amongst the four of us could pull off that pink shirt.
It's really not pink. It's actually red, but I don't – our yes, on our less than high-def cameras via Zoom, shows up as pink.
Everybody thinks my McKellar Enterprises toboggan and 24/7 Sports are all both orange, but they're bright red. So well, it doesn't pick up reds very well.
Yeah, it doesn't pick up Brent. Now, I do have pink. I every now and then with a Brent Skinner suit, of course, that makes everything look good. I will wear a pink tie, which I for years and years I was like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And then the people that know fashion are like, Mike, you got to do it. You got to do it. It'll look good. And I finally did. I get more compliments on that when I wear the gray with the pink tie the little pocket square, not Pat Bradley oversized pocket square, more of a subtle pocket square. Pat's like hitting you over the head with a club. Look at my pocket square. I'm more of a, hey, this is just a, it's a companion piece. But yes, I'm wearing red to answer your question. Back on point. Sorry,
well,
go ahead.
Well, no, it's like I'm wearing yellow, but it looks blue in the screen. So
you gotta check that lens.
I get it.
And I shaved my mustache last night, and I don't know why that's still coming over.
Yeah, because you're a virile man, Mad Dog, and it just grows back within minutes.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
We like your shirt. I'm not so sure that Booby Miles and Mike Winchell over your shoulder there like your shirt.
Mike Winchell.
Yeah, he's the key. He was the quarterback.
I'm assuming that's a dimer for you, Friday Night Lights. If you were able pull off that name, yeah. I think it's one of the best football movies ever made. I read the book.
Who makes it? Who makes it? Who's the actor you're like, yeah, he brought it all together? Who is it?
Well, I mean, Billy Bob Thornton is the focal point. So, I mean, he's obviously good in it. And Billy Bob, who's done baseball movies as well, you can buy, it's like Kevin Costner, you can buy him in a sports role. Gene Hackman, you can buy these guys in a sports role. You know, I didn't think I'd like Brad Pitt in Moneyball, as I've said. He won me over. That movie won me over when I thought I'd hate it. But there's a lot of actors that can't pull that off. Mm-hmm. Can't pull that off. By the way, just real quick, do you know whose famous actor's birthday is today? Jamie, I know you like birthdays and anniversaries. And
There's so many. I mean, you gotta
He's
give
63.
A
there's a hint. So that rules out all the young guns.
Is it Billy Bob? It's not Billy Bob Thornton.
No, not Billy Bob. He's probably around that age, I think. Maybe a little younger.
Any other hints?
Saturday Night Live. That should give it away.
Oh, now wait a second here.
I was going to use one of his movies as my backdrop, and I couldn't get it to download. And then I was going to throw out the question, what's his best movie?
New Saturday?
63 years old.
Hold on. I'm trying to go on. I'm just getting shot in the dark. Eddie Murphy.
There's a new sheriff in town, guys.
No his way. Are you serious?
It's Reggie Hammond. Yes.
Oh,
yes. See what happens when you actually try, as opposed to just give a smart ass guess. You can do these things.
Eddie Murphy. That's I love Eddie Murphy.
Who doesn't? Right now, I always make the distinction. There's a line in the sand. There's young, vibrant, funny as hell Eddie Murphy. And then, like a lot of actors, I don't want to say sold out, but the money is so heavy in animated films that he just became animated film guy, and he I don't watch those movies. No offense to those that do. I did see Shrek on a Gamecock baseball bus trip. Somebody popped in Shrek, so I was forced to watch it. But he burst onto the scene. He was 20 years old when 48 Hours was made. He follows that up with Trading Places. These are not dimers. These are Ben Franklin's.
Oh yeah.
He follows that up with Beverly Hills Cop. Mm-hmm. This is all in a few years span. This is like 82 to 84. You can't come out of the gate any hotter than that.
Coming to America came
and
right
then
after
Coming
that.
To America right after that. But then it just didn't happen.
And life, he couldn't do Raw or Delirious now.
Oh gosh, no.
But those are two of the funniest stand-up specials I've ever heard.
That gets canceled in 5 minutes. Yes.
Your wife's a Bigfoot, Gus, and you cheer in the little big feet, Gus. They put their face in the water and they come up with fish. This is my house.
So I don't watch Saturday Night Live. I wish I still could, but I can't. Like, it was funny when I was a kid. But there are two episodes I watch every single year. I watch the Thanksgiving episode. Although this year got a little bit political, so maybe that'll have to be canceled next year too. Because I'm just, I just want to laugh, man. I just want to laugh. Like
that's
I,
all that show know. Is now.
But the Christmas episode. So what they do, you know, they go back and pull the great Thanksgiving Christmas clips from over the years. Right. And there is a recent Christmas clip that they play in the Christmas Saturday Night Live Christmas special with Eddie Murphy from a few years ago, and he was an elf. who was freaking out because there were like people were being attacked at the North Pole and all this stuff, and there was a live camera shot, and he couldn't get through the skit without laugh. I always laugh when they can't get through it without laughing.
Absolutely.
I think it's hilarious. If you haven't seen it, I can't remember his name, but it's hilarious. And you just laugh for 5 straight minutes because he's in this elf costume and he's yelling into this camera about all kinds of crazy stuff. And then, yeah, I don't know. You'll have to go see it. I don't want to give the whole thing away if you haven't seen it, but it brought back the loud, obnoxious Eddie Murphy that he could get away with being funny.
Yeah.
Like not a lot of people can do that. He could do it. And it brought that back a few years ago, probably, you know, 4 or 5. So
he was immensely talented. It was controversial at the time because he dropped a lot of F-bombs and a lot of lewd. Now it would be considered tame, although, as JC mentions, it wouldn't be the language.
Certain parts of it.
Well, no, this is what I'm saying. It wouldn't be the language that would get him canceled. It'd be the subject matter, homophobia, things of that nature. You just wouldn't get away with it today.
Slightly sexist.
Oh, no question. Yeah, no question. But the you remember there's the big thing in his act in Raw where Bill Cosby, who we later found out is a serial rapist, he is preaching to Eddie Murphy, you don't have to curse. I would like to talk to you about your show.
It's so far and filthy,
blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't have to curse. And Eddie's like, he calls Richard Pryor up, and Pryor says, is he paying you money? No. Are you doing well? No. Well, tell Bill to have a Coke and a Coke smile and shut the bleep up.
Coke and a smile.
and then later, the one thing I did love is like the Mark Twain Society, they put the best comics in that, and Eddie Murphy got inducted, and it was right after the Bill Cosby stuff, and he gets out there and he's like, oh, I can't believe it. If you'd have told me back when I did Raw and Delirious that, you know, I would have 10 kids and happily married, and Bill would be in prison. I'd have thought you were crazy. And then he goes, who is America's dad now? I mean, he still hadn't let it go.
No, and,
it's that was old. At that moment, that was old school score settling Eddie Murphy.
Oh,
that
yeah.
We all know from Raw and Delirious. But man, what he said, Ricky Rick. I mean, that's just the whole
thing. I mean,
we still watch it. We still watch those every single
day. Yeah. Oh, he was just – and at that young of age, like when Chevy Chase and those guys were – so I'm not old enough to remember the first wave. Like I didn't see Belushi and Chase and Murray on SNL. And quite frankly, when I see reruns, it doesn't stand up to me today. It's not that funny. When I watch Eddie Murphy, when I watch Phil Hartman, was one of the most talented people to ever walk this earth, if it wasn't for his crazy wife who killed him in cold blood. There's no doubt Phil Hartman would. I mean, he's a first ballot, just all around performer, and he got robbed of that sadly. But Dana Carvey, immensely talented. This is when SNL was funny, and they weren't sharing the same joke book as every late night comic, which is basically a political hit piece for like an hour. And if there's a joke that's remotely funny, great. But the main thing is to actually kind of put a political message out there. It didn't used to be that way. That's not how we grew up. Like, I thought Dana Carvey impersonating Bush was hilarious. I thought Phil Hartman impersonating Clinton was hilarious. Like, they're all made. How the world, nobody is, you don't get somebody to do Kamala Harris in this day and age of comedy. Like, that's comedy gold, and they won't touch it. And they won't touch Joe Biden. Like, it's just a different, but back then anything goes. Comedy was the top priority, not politics.
Yeah.
And so those were the golden years of the show and of comedy in general in a lot of ways, because it was unfiltered. But I grew up as a kid, and I was just old enough where on a Saturday night, you're a kid. You don't have a driver's license. You can't do anything. If Saturday Night Live was on, my parents let me watch, probably. Right. A questionable decision, but whatever. So I watch, and I grew up, and Eddie Murphy and Joe Piscopo were the first two guys I ever saw in that setting, and they were freaking hilarious. They saved the show. The show was about to bomb. There was rumors it was going to get canceled, because when you lose Chase, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner, I mean, Belushi, like, these are all just heavy, heavy hitters, and they're all just gone because they all went to Hollywood. So anyway, number for chat row, number one Eddie Murphy movie. I would throw that out there on his 63rd birthday.
Ooh, that's a hard question. It's a similar question to what we had yesterday. One of the dimers of all dimers in my book is Smokey and the Bandit. Like, Smokey and the Bandit can't be on, and I say, yeah, I think I'm going to pass. Like, that never happens. I'm always going to watch Smokey and the Bandit like it's the first time. I'm a huge fan of Sally Fields from that era. Oh, yeah. I mean, Sally Fields was
How long you think it took for Burt Reynolds to disrobe his coat?
Well, I think the story, because we asked this question, like, what's the best Burt Reynolds movie? I mean, like, you know, you could do a bunch with Burt Reynolds, but I think the story on Smokey and the Bandit was Burt Reynolds and Sally Fields did not exactly get along.
Oh, is that right?
When they began filming that, I don't think they were on the same page, and it took them some time to kind of figure it out, and they did. But
Burt had Lonnie Anderson, who, I mean, I just leave it at that. Burt had Lonnie Anderson.
Well, what was the question, Phil? Mike, you weren't on yesterday. This was yesterday's conversation, right, Phil? Burt versus Tom?
Yeah, Tom Selleck and Burt Reynolds.
And it spurred from Mad Dog's mustache.
Of course.
You know, like,
I can see that.
Who had the better mustache? And then, who was a better actor? Was it Mr. Baseball, Tom Selleck, Mr. 3000, or whatever the movie was? I don't
know. Yeah, Tom.
In Magnum, he allegedly played, wasn't he a former baseball player for the Tigers or no?
He wore a Tigers hat. Like, that was his team. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he played a former player or not. But yeah, I mean, Bird had the more distinguished career.
Best former baseball player of all time on a TV show, though, is Sam Malone from Cheers.
Sam Malone, yeah.
Has to be.
I just listened to a podcast with him and him talking about that role, and just like Cheers was going to be canceled 6-7 times. That show had no chance. What saved it was they put it on must-see Thursday night TV on NBC. So you had Cosby, you had Night Court, and you had one other just like can't miss show, and they put Cheers in that lineup at 9 o'clock. That's what saved it, because the executives were never high on that show, just like they were never high on Seinfeld. Like, I don't get it. You're just sitting in a bar and cracking jokes at a bar that this, we're going to get 30 minutes a week out of this crap. No, I don't think so. And who is this Ted Danson guy? I don't know. Who's Shelley Long? And it just happened to become one of the most successful shows of all time,
right? Or period, and not just shows, like as far as anything that's ever been watched on television, it's one of the
still holds up.
Yeah.
Oh today. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
not many shows do.
No, you're right. You're exactly right. It is 11:19 here on Inside the Gamecocks, the show. It is raining. The rain's already moved through Columbia, as we well know, so they will play baseball tonight. But tomorrow, if you haven't checked the weather, and you're like, you're a perfect weather guy or you're a perfect weather girl, and you say, I just want the weather to be perfect, you literally can't write the script any better for the next 4 days. Between 68 and 70 and sunny, basically no humidity, no rain, no clouds, and of course you got baseball coming to town. And if you want to look good, the last time the third-ranked team walked into Founders Park, they got swept. So if you want to look good, while hopefully you're feeling good about your Gamecock baseball program, you want to head to Gamecock Traditions, GamecockTraditions.com. And remember, they have the 30-ounce and the 20, but come on. I mean, he's going to buy the 20 when you can buy the 30. 30-ounce Yeti Carolina cups. They're perfect for 30 ounces of bourbon. I can assure you of that, because I do it a lot. They also works for 30 ounces of vodka. If you need Dixie vodka or chicken gock in a 30-ounce cup, you're going to want to get it from Gamecock Traditions, a tradition unlike any other, not like the Masters. So GamecockTraditions.com if you want to order it and have it shipped to your doorstep. All right, we'll hit a timeout. When we return, if y'all haven't seen the numbers, way to go, ladies. Iowa and LSU blew the doors off of the TV ratings. I mean, blew the doors off the TV ratings. And then a question for our esteemed panel here, Mad Dog Mustache, the Golden Tones, and Schubert. If you had to start your football team with any current SEC quarterback, current SEC quarterback, who would that quarterback be?
Was that the question that we were going to answer before we started talking about TV?
So what we do, we have these things called teasers. So we ask the question, and then we don't answer it, and we allow the audience to, you know.
I've already got my answer, but I'm going to
Like, I don't need you to answer it now because we'll have a commercial break, so it holds the audience through the commercial break.
Exactly.
Right. Maximize TSL.
Me and Kincaid are going to answer this question.
Are we figuring this out now?
As long as we eventually answer it, I'm fine.
The question's out there. Current SEC quarterback, you plug them into your team. Of course, here, our audience is mostly South Carolina.
Harrison says Davis Bevel, definitely.
But you can take it a different direction, too. I'm just going to start a team tomorrow, and I want this quarterback to start that team. Who would that be? And it has to be a current SEC quarterback. So when we return, we'll get into that as well. Plenty more football. Mike's got a drive around the SEC. By the way, if you haven't figured it out, the drive around the SEC takes a little bit longer. That's because we have to go all the way to Oklahoma and all the way to Texas and then come back to the East Coast.
That's right.
Thank God we're not driving around the ACC. We'd be driving for the entire show.
Long haul.
That would be brought to you by some RV company. Hang tight. ITG will be right back.
Chicken cock originated in Kentucky, like so many other bourbons. And so the resurrection of it, you know, Paris, Kentucky, that's the county seat of Bourbon County. So much of this whiskey was being made in that Bourbon County, put on ships and barges and shipped down Ohio, down the Mississippi, and got to New Orleans, where it got distributed all over the world. And people kept saying, well, hey, I want some more of that whiskey from Bourbon County. And so that's how bourbon whiskey got its name. And chicken cock originated actually in Paris, Kentucky, which is today Bourbon County.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, in Bluffton, and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Gamecock owned and operated.
Building your dream home is often just that, a dream, and sometimes a nightmare. But at the Barn Door Company, they commit to quality and build without sacrifice. Customization, open floor plans, limitless flooring options, maintenance-free and easy insulation perks, and affordability are just a few reasons why they've been named one of the best builders in the U.S. Believe in your dreams. Visit thebarndominiumco.com. That's thebarndominiumco.com. The Barn Door Company. Gamecock owned. Gamecock operated.
The preferred sign partner of Gamecock Athletics is Signorama Columbia, and they should be yours too. A full-service sign company that handles design, production, install, and service, Signorama Columbia has helped to bring to life the perfect vision for so many all across South Carolina. Owned and operated by proud Gamecock alumni, they can handle all types of signage, including interior and exterior, vehicle graphics, and more. Go to Signorama.com and find the West Columbia location, or call them at 803-407-9284. Bring your brand to life with Signorama Columbia, and go Gamecocks.
Hey Gamecock fans, this is Roman Kimball with South Carolina Baseball. My friends over at Electric Bikes of Charleston have the largest selection of e-bikes in South Carolina. You can cruise up to high speeds of 28 miles per hour, which is about 70 miles an hour slower than my fastball. Stay in shape and enjoy your life with an electric bike from Electric Bikes of Charleston, where buyers come from all across South Carolina. Visit electricbikescharleston.com. See you at the ballpark, and go Gamecocks.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
God bless our great University of South Carolina, the beautiful campus of the Gamecocks. Welcome back inside the Gamecocks, the show here at 11:27 on Hump Day. Mike Morgan, Schubert, and Mad Dog Mustache Molinax until 2 o'clock. Derek Scott will join us at 12:05 today as well. Hey, anxious to get his thoughts on the Final Four, too. Obviously, we'll have plenty of that. With the golden tones up there in your upper left hand corner. Speaking of hoops, we've talked about the villains and all that stuff. We'll get back to the football question in a minute. But this, guys, Mike, you're a TV guy. I mean, you know exactly what goes into it and what it takes to get eyeballs in the whole nine yards. We've talked about the villain stuff yesterday. We were kind of comparing and contrasting what women's basketball is doing this year in their Final Four versus what's happening on the men's side and the villains and the different scenarios and who's pulling for who and yada, yada, yada. The love stories. Everybody loves the love story, right? Iowa and Caitlin Clark certainly are that. Iowa and LSU averaged 12.3 million viewers. It's the most watched women's basketball game ever by a long, long shot. And probably they're going to want Caitlin Clark and Iowa to win the semifinal this weekend as well and get to the national championship. I think that would continue to move mountains for the sport. But here's what it also surpassed. It averaged more. I said women's, right? Y'all heard me correctly. Okay. Every women's college basketball game ever. It also brought more viewers than every ESPN college basketball game ever. Every Major League Baseball game last season, every NHL game last season, every MLS game last season, every NBA game last season, except for one. I don't know which one that is, but who cares? And every college football regular season game last year but one. That's what this LSU, the villain, and the love story. Mike, you're a TV guy. Is there anything that goes better than the villain and the love story? I mean, the ratings prove that. Crazy, crazy numbers.
Yeah, it's a villain. It's a love story. And I can't remember if I said this on this show or I was on Sirius XM yesterday. Or no, it was, I guess it was right before the game, whenever day that was, with Sean Farnham and Chris Budden. And most of it was the men's talk. And then they threw me a question on the women's at the end, and I said this will be the most watched women's basketball game of all time. I don't think it'll even be close. And I know a lot of people would like to take that in the direction of women's basketball can do no wrong. It's on fire. In some ways it is, but Caitlin Clark she's more than the hero villain thing. She is a transformation. I mean, I hate to put it in this term, but like Tiger Woods brought people to golf that never watched golf.
Yep.
That's what Caitlin Clark is doing.
Great.
If Caitlin Clark gets eliminated in the semis, you're not going to have that high a number in the national championship game. My prediction. Could be wrong. Could be wrong. But that's for so many people. Another example, Venus Williams in women's tennis. People that never watched women's tennis tuned in specifically to see Venus Williams. That's what Caitlin Clark is. She is a phenomenon. It's not media hype. She plays the game differently than anybody that's played the sport. And she's doing things with a Larry Bird, Indiana State-like supporting cast compared to who everybody else is working with. We talked about this on JC and Morgan yesterday. So you add all that up, and that was going to provide a monster number. Not to mention, and I'm not here to carry the torch for ESPN. That's not my role on this show, but I will tell you, the strength of ESPN is they can promote an event like that and convince you it is must-see TV more so than any other network. Because, A, they don't have the rights to the men's tournament, so there's a big void there this time of year. And, B, they can promote it on every imaginable platform from ABC to ESPN to ESPN2 to ESPNU to the SEC Network and beyond. It's all they – the way this works is like the producers of First Take and the Get Up show, they tell Greenberg and Stephen A. Smith, here's what we should talk about. Now, women's basketball would never make those shows, but guess what? ESPN knows they've got a phenomenon and they've got a chance to score an unreal rating. So you are going to talk about this. Even if you don't even know what you're talking about, talk about it for 20 minutes. And so that's what happens. So people that, again, don't spend 2 seconds and could care less about women's basketball are convinced it was must-see TV. I told the story yesterday. I carved out 2 hours of time and watched every second of the game. I really generally wanted to watch it, not because everybody else is watching it. That's not enough for me. I don't care what everybody else is watching. Somebody says, oh, you got to see. No, I don't. I'll choose what I watch and what I'm interested in. I generally had an interest in that game and that matchup. So, yeah, that is a monster number. It's a monster story. And women's basketball certainly had 2 years, but so much of it is Caitlin Clark. And that's no disrespect to Breonna Stewart, Shamika Holdsclaw, Deanna Taurasi, Briner. You know, we can talk about the South Carolina players, et cetera. No disrespect to any of them. They don't move the needle as one individual like Kate Clark has. She's just different.
I'll tell you this, too. Think about the Super Bowl ratings. What was different about this year's Super Bowl? What sideshow did we have?
Oh,
we had the biggest
Taylor Swift.
The biggest superstar in the world.
That's right.
People paying attention to, and that's what Caitlin Clark is. I mean, she's a superstar. So, yeah, if Iowa gets eliminated, UConn and South Carolina actually set the record for women's basketball viewership with a championship game a few years ago. It won't even come close. People like superstars, and they're gravitated toward them, and they like to see what's going on. I tend to think their game against UConn will approach, villain or not, equal numbers, you know, because it's UConn. Everybody, you know, gun to most people's head that have never watched women's basketball but know sports. If you put a guy, they like name a women's basketball program that's good, they're all going to say UConn or Tennessee. And so they're still the big dogs. And I think it'll. But once she goes out of the tournament, you can cut that number in half, probably, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's probably a pretty good projection. I think that.
I'd be like probably Taylor Swift playing day two of a festival. You know, yeah. No offense to the Dave Matthews Band on Sunday, but nobody's staying like they would for Taylor.
For Taylor. Yeah, I think for the first time, well, not I think. I mean, I think we all know for the first time ever when you've got – remember, so let's go back a couple of years. Remember when they changed the schedule, the calendar, so the men's Final Four and the women's Final Four would kind of coexist? And so now you've got all this stuff going around on the same weekend. You got a national champion. You got a Final Four on Friday, a Final Four Saturday, a national championship. Which, by the way, I'm still very flabbergasted that they play the national championship of college basketball and college football on Monday nights. But we'll do that another day. And I get the TV ratings, but we can do that another day. For the first time in a long time, you have more zazz. Because I was going to say storylines. But I think you could take the word storylines, guys, and throw that into that zazz word if you want to about the women's side, because you've got – so NC State, much like the men, you've got a little bit of a kind of a Cinderella. Like, the Cinderellas in women's basketball aren't really what they are in men's basketball, right, guys? Like, you're not going to see 11 seeds from the women's side right now making it to the Final Four. I don't believe. So
no,
you've got a little bit.
There's not that much parity in that league. You're right. No.
Mm-mm. No. And I think the thing that obviously clearly could have made this a lot better is had Iowa and LSU been competing in the Final Four versus in the Elite Eight, but they're not. So you've got the Geno situation. Geno is still a story. You just pointed it out, JC. You're dead on, I believe, that UConn, for the common fan, will always be tip of the tongue when it comes to women's basketball, and they're in it. Paige Beckers is once again kind of back in the spotlight. She's a story. Iowa, clearly. And then you've got the best program in the country, the most consistent program in the country over the last 7 years, and their fourth straight Final Four, South Carolina. And the Gamecocks are kind of the villains in this thing. Mike, we touched on some of this yesterday, didn't get your thoughts on it. I'd be interested to hear what you've got to say, because you've got some different scenarios here. Phil and I kind of agreed that the what was the word that we used, Phil? Like the general feel of this thing, really, we won't really still know until the national championship. What do I mean by that? UConn is a villain to a lot of college basketball fans because they've been so good over the years. They haven't won a national championship since 2016, but they're still UConn. Geno's still there. They still have all these great players, right? But also, as JC pointed out, Geno's kind of the old guy now, right? Kind of been around a while. Oh man, it'd be neat to see Geno win one more and put Ryan Cup into the sunset.
Grandpa.
You know? See, you kind of got that
Jesus
angle.
Bethany, oh, did the broom clear out. Old Grandpa Geno, he's kind of moseying into the gym.
And then you got a lot of people just don't like South Carolina.
Really?
Outside of the country, a lot of people don't care for Dawn. A lot of people, but also most importantly,
the media gives her. I mean, it's a slurp.
I'm not talking
fest.
About the media. I'm yeah, not talking like, about the media.
So I don't see many people that dislike Dawn. I mean, there was a whole national anthem thing a few years ago, which LSU just pulled off, and Kim gave her own version of that. I know South Carolina media is not going to give that much scrutiny, right? You're just going to gloss right over it. And the national media is not going to do it. They're not going to touch that hornet's nest. So other than that, like Dawn always presents herself very well in interviews. I thought she handled the LSU fracas as well as you can handle it, much better than Kim Mulkey did. I think Kim Mulkey's the villain.
No doubt.
And Geno, again, if we're going to be brutally honest, as a male in that sport, I know I covered that sport. I did a season of Gamecock women's basketball. There are a lot of people in that sport that, quite frankly, don't believe a man should be coaching. That's just pure facts. So a lot of people consider him a villain for that reason. I think Dawn has been like the toast of the town. She gets all the love from the media. I think fans generally like Dawn. They remember her as a player. They still talk about her cameo on Martin. I thought she should have been nominated for an Emmy on that, by the way.
Dawn. It's a dimer. You're a dimer.
Dimer. I honestly don't think South Carolina is much of a villain. I know your point. Like, people just get tired of the same team winning all the time.
Yeah, people don't like that. I mean, it's the college football. I mean, does anybody really want to see Ohio State and Alabama? But I will say this, though. What I'm getting at with the villain thing from a Dawn standpoint, I don't view it this way. I'm just saying. The rest of the country, Mike, let's go to other places. We got to get out of our bubble. We're in a bubble. We're in the Southeast. You know, what we see in here in this area is different than what's seen from a bird's eye view from everywhere else, unless you're totally invested in women's basketball. Like you had in the chat box here, Ed said the thing that Dawn mishandled was the BYU game cancellation. We talked about that, I think, last week, and she did. I disagreed with her on that. But that's what you get, right, guys? You get the snippets. So the Pacific Northwest, the Midwest, the Southwest, like all these other areas of the country, they know South Carolina's good. They don't watch them all the time. They don't. But what they hear on ESPN is the BYU situation, or like you pointed out a couple years ago, the national anthem. So they get one dose of Dawn Staley a year or two, and they instantly, they don't care for it. I'm talking about fans here, not media. So that's the natural fan reaction to that stuff. And then you've got the exhaustion factor of, my God, these guys are here every single year.
That's the bigger one to me. Because
absolutely, 100%.
The people that cover women's basketball, quite honestly, we're not very critical of Dawn in either one of those cases. They either glossed over it or they took her side, with the exception of like OutKick. No one else went there, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. So I think your average person doesn't even know those stories. They just know Dawn Staley seems pretty cool whenever she's interviewed, wins a lot of games, was a great former player, seems likable, took a program that was a moribund program and turned them into a national power. I think Dawn's likability or cum rating, to go back to TV and radio terms, is pretty darn high. I don't think the same could be said about Gino. I think Gino is much more polarizing. Again, these aren't my opinions. Like, I respect the hell out of Gino. I don't have anything against Gino. Guys won 11 national titles, helped put women's basketball on the map. You know, Dawn's got to win 9 more national championships to get to where Gino is. Pat Summitt didn't get to where Gino is. So a lot of the people in the sport that hated Gino for sometimes unjustifiable reasons, he is what he is, but for various reasons, and he doesn't give two F's about you liking him. So he says a lot of things that rub people the wrong way. He could be ornery. He can be irascible. That's just his personality. Kim Mulkey, same thing. I think those are the most disliked, unpopular coaches from the national people that don't really live in the bubble of women's basketball. Dawn, she gets amazing coverage. And I think most fans that only know her a few times a year, like March, are like, yeah, she seems pretty cool. I like Dawn Staley.
I don't know, Mike. The national women's basketball, like, go back to last year. The national women's basketball media, of course, 90% of these people are UConn fans. Like, honestly. The set at ESPN, they're going to be torn tonight, Friday. My bad. Because are they going to pull against their darling Huskies with their golden goose on the other team?
No, they're not going to do that, JC. Yeah, but you're hinting at. But
my point is, like, last year
Malika
they were
Andrews
openly
care about UConn,
openly critical of South Carolina being a physical team. Oh, they're just a bunch of they're too physical. They don't really play basketball. You heard that narrative last year about South Carolina and Dawn. Now, it wasn't on this stage. We didn't really care. The collective country didn't care about it as much because there was no Caitlin Clark, or there was, and she just wasn't a star. But I don't know. I mean, they've been a little critical. I'm not sure though. I do agree though that in general, Dawn does not get the critical coverage that a Kim Mulkey or, you know, maybe somebody like that does.
Yeah, no, I mean, but publicly, I don't think she, you know, makes such outlandish statements as frequently as some of the other ones do. But to what JB was talking about earlier, I think the narrative surrounding this women's championship is still kind of in flux and won't really be solidified until after this first round of games are played. So are you going to get Dawn Staley and the five upstarts versus America's darling, or Sweetheart, are you going to get Dawn Staley and the five upstarts against, you know, the what they're trying to now kind of lean into, the beloved old man Gino, that narrative that they're trying to put out there, when we all kind of, if we're old enough, can remember a time, you know, the Evil Empire days when it was Gino and Pat going at each other, you know, and kind of remember that more mouthy Gino Auriemma.
or here's something else. NC State wins both tournaments.
Right.
Well, now that way, yeah,
and then there you get your Cinderella.
Yeah, that's the Wolfpack right. Just walks away with both trophies. Like we're like, well,
bird, everybody.
Yeah, okay, Mike. They win the men's and the women's, and all of a sudden, what do we talk about now, guys? You know,
but it's like, okay, so from that national facing voice point of view and perspective, Mike, you know,
how much is someone in your position rooting for NC State just to get beat in that first round so that you don't have to learn all these other names and, yeah, and backstories, right?
Well,
yeah. Who's your coach again?
This is what I always tell people, because, and I don't get much of this, but I know a lot of other announcers that do. They think that, you know, the person hates this school and likes this school, whatever. We're all selfish in that we want the best possible matchup, because that gives us the most eyeballs. It makes for a much better broadcast. That's what we all want. When you're in just TV land, that's all you care about, the best possible matchup. So what does TV want here? You're right. They don't want NC State. The executives that are keeping an eye on all this and hoping they've just found a golden goose in the rough in women's basketball, they want to continue this wave of momentum. That's Caitlin Clark, that's Geno, and that's South Carolina. Like, those are the three things here that actually produce. NC State does not produce in that way. That being said, I mean, at the end of the day, they still want the best games. If NC State happens to be on a heater and they're playing better than some of the other ones, great. But I don't think that's the top story by all. I think they're a distant fourth, to say the least.
So that's all right. Think about that. Think about that for a second. On the women's side, and I don't want to put words in people's mouths and stuff. That's not what I'm trying to do here. But the general feel that I have, agreeing with Phil and agreeing with what you just said, Mike, the general feel that I have is, really don't want to see NC State in the national championship on the women's side. Turn the page to the men's side.
Oh, it's the complete opposite.
Complete opposite. Yeah, I mean, they love this DJ Burns guy Kevin Keats, and NC State is an 11 seed, and they're on this heater. Jay Billis said the other day, and Jay says some things sometimes where I'm like, come on, Jay. You know, if the camera wasn't on, would you really say that? But he said it. You know, this 9-game run that they're in the middle of, he said, was the most incredible run he's ever seen coming out of the ACC, because they weren't even going to make the – I don't even know if they're going to make the NIT.
No, they were 17 and 14. They were 17 and 14 before the ACC tournament.
Right.
I read an article on our Wolfpack site talking about, well, they should fire Keats, and here's some guys they could hire, but none of them are all that good, so they'll probably just not fire him. I was like,
I think that was a done deal.
Down in the dumps kind of deal. Yeah. I mean,
I think he was gone. I think he was as good as gone.
Legit, too. They've beaten Duke twice. They beat North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, 33% of their games were good teams.
I mean, yeah. So
it's crazy. So, JC,
go ahead.
No, you're good, Mike. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the games that they won in the ACC tournament, a kid hits a half-court shot just to force it into overtime. That was the semifinal game against Virginia. Mm-hmm. They were done. They're a cat. I mean, they have 9 lives. Just to get to this point. So it is a remarkable story. I don't think there's a ton of hyperbole with that. I think it is a remarkable story. Now, UConn, with the way they are playing, and I actually think, and I'll get into this on the Love Chevy driver on the SEC, that I think Alabama has the best chance of anybody to beat UConn just because of their scoring punch. But they're trying to find somebody to keep these games close with UConn, because they're just beating the tar out of everybody, which is not going to make for a great rating and everything else. But who that is, not quite sure. I don't know if people believe it's NC State. People have fallen in love with the Burns kid. They have just he's not 6'9". He's probably closer to 6'7". He's not 275. He's probably 325. But he's become infectious. People love watching him play. He's a big, heavy guy with a million-dollar smile that's making plays that you're like, huh? I don't think he's doing that against Zach Edey, though. I think he's about to run into a wall. And much like Murray Boyle – whoop, we just lost Jamie. Yeah. Much like Murray Boyle's, you know, ran into the size of Baylor, and you could tell how that changed his dominance. He looked a little bit kind of overwhelmed in that game for the first time probably this year. You know, that's what the 7-footer for Oregon could do. I think Burns is going to realize that the shots are going to be a lot harder to come by against the great wall of Zach Edey.
Do you think, though, that that's going to hold up against UConn? Because I don't. I don't think Edie's game translates well to the next level, and I think UConn plays a bit more
totally agree.
NBA style than what you're going to see from any of the other three.
And quite frankly, I think Hurley is a much better coach than the Duke coach, who never made any adjustments. I didn't understand what they were doing in that game. No, I think Edie's dominance that he's had here of late, and I'm not trying to this is not me trashing Zach Edie. But what you saw in the last couple of games where he was just at times a one-man wrecking crew, I think that stops here.
Yeah.
With the matchups that they will have, that stops right now, right here. There are he's not the first guy who's 7'4" to play college basketball. Now, it would help if the officials call 7 seconds in the lane. The rule is 3. On multiple possessions, he was camping out in the lane and no whistle. That is frustrating beyond belief if you're a Tennessee fan. So I think the first thing that will be done is the coaches will go, by the way, you see that big 7'4" guy? He's big enough as it is to allow him more than 3 seconds in the lane. Probably not a good idea. You might want to blow the whistle on that. And much like in football, if you tell the officials before a game, hey, this guy holds on every play, you might not get every call, but you'll get more than you otherwise would, because the officials know, guarantee you, they know that Zach Edey got away with multiple 3 seconds in the key violations that were not called.
I got some UConn men. Let's say they went out, and let's say they play NC State. Play NC State beats Purdue. Because I agree with you, Mike. They're going to start calling it, and I think there's a reason Purdue has been upset prone all these years. The whole stadium is going to be pulling for NC State, like everybody else's fans. That matters, as I saw in 2017 when the whole arena was pulling for Carolina over Gonzaga when they were coming back. Same stadium. All right, so let's say they beat NC State and UConn wins. Here are the last 4 UConn men's national championship games. They beat number 5 seed San Diego State last year in basically an all mid-major Final Four, a heavy mid-major Final Four. In 2014, they beat the 8-seeded Kentucky team that was pretty loaded, but an 8-seed. In 2011, they beat the 8-seeded Butler team that was a Cinderella. And then in 2004, they beat a 3rd-seed Georgia Tech under Paul Hewitt that did have Chris Bosh, but it was still Paul Hewitt.
Right.
I mean, these guys have drawn. I mean, I didn't realize this till now, just thinking back, because I was like, didn't they beat Butler one time? And then they had that Kentucky team. They've had some fortuitous draws once they've gotten to the championship game.
Oh, that's true. And they've won 5 national titles since 99 with 3 different coaches. Mm-hmm. That's something that's never been done. Remember, Joe Gibbs won 3 Super Bowls with 3 different quarterbacks. UConn is a program. They're an outlier in so many different ways. So this would be 6 national championships since 99.
Now the first one they beat Duke. And that was a big one for them. They got over the hump.
That was very, because
they were one of those teams that always go out Elite Eight. Sometimes they get to the Final Four. I remember they beat Clemson 1 year on a last second shot to get to the Final Four, or the Elite Eight or something, back in the 90s. But I mean, very unique program up there for sure.
No doubt about it. I'll tell you somebody else who's unique: Suki and Salsaritas. If you're thinking of somewhere to go for lunch today, if you're thinking for somewhere to load up as you're watching some games this weekend, as always, this will be including you, Gamecock baseball fans. Jamie mentioned the great weather. How about some great food to go along with it? We bring the mariachi band. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
They haven't played in a while.
We've just been kind of having them on retainer back here. They're already raring to go.
Yeah, we got to put them to work, for crying out loud.
They've been taking our money.
Yeah, they're just sitting there with their instruments and their sombreros looking at us like, hey, are you guys ready? Yes, we're ready. Thank you, guys. We've talked about the Fiesta Packs. We've given a few of those away on the Fab 5. They've also got 3 Amigo bundles. They've got all kinds of things if you're catering. The catering hotline, 803-543-6297. 2 locations. You got Lexington and the Target Center. And, of course, the West Columbia location across from the Lexington Medical Center. That is Columbia's version of Salsaritas. Terrific Tex-Mex for all of you out there looking for a great bite to eat. And when you do so, say hello to Suki. a man of the people, and a man of great tacos.
A man of great tacos.
Where's the t-shirt?
Sounds like a Suki, morality
a
plan.
Man of great tacos.
Who's that? Well, that's Suki. Well, now who's he? He's a man of great tacos.
He's a man of great tacos. He's also a huge Gamecock fan. So he'll be while he's serving up tacos, he'll be watching the games. I'm sure he gets a little frustrated at times. You know, Suki wears the Gamecocks on his sleeve, but he doesn't let that emotion after a tough loss get to him when he's preparing a good burrito. And that's a sign of strength. That's a sign of mental strength and agility that only Suki has.
That was a killer stat, by the way, from JC. It would be the sixth title since 99 for UConn. They're like, I think they're around 20th all time in program wins, 2021, somewhere in there, which clearly doesn't put them at the top with the Kansases and the Dukes and the North Carolinas. But the reality of it is if they do pull this off, they'll tie North Carolina for third all time. And every time you talk about blue bloods in the sport, I swear every time this conversation comes up, it's always the same four. Oh yeah, Duke, Kansas, North Carolina, Kentucky. What about UConn? Right. Oh yeah, probably UConn too. Yeah. That's always the rebuttal.
Right. Know? I mean, UCLA and Indiana get mentioned before UConn a lot.
Yeah. And they shouldn't.
Here's my theory on one of the reasons why. One of its location. I mean, they're just way out there in the Northeast. The other one is when you think of Kentucky, you think of Rupp. Oh, glorious Rupp Arena. When you think of Duke, Cameron Indoor. Tar Heels, the Dean Dome, Kansas. This was my, if I ever write a thank you letter to Dave Odom, it'll be for scheduling a game at Allen Fieldhouse because I got to call a game. That place is friggin' awesome. What does UConn play? What's the name of their arena?
Gumbel Pavilion? I don't know. Pavilions.
I don't know either.
They play Summit in Hartford. I mean,
it's
in
a place called Stores. I mean,
have the window dressing of pageantry of the other one.
With the exception of that crazy year in 14, when they were in the American or Conference USA, whatever it was called for a while, because they got in that league because of football. They got out of the Big East and they were in the American or whatever for a while. They lost all their rivals, and their men's program went to crap. Their women's program was still up there, but the men's program was like, man, what are we doing going to Memphis on a Tuesday night playing Tulane? And they had nothing in common. I think getting back in the Big East has been a big, big deal for them because, as our boy Timmy B always says, Big East tournament, if you love old school college basketball, that is still intact. It's at the Garden. You got Georgetown, Providence, Villanova, all those little schools that kind of St. John's, the home. I mean, it's still what we remember it being. And I think that's helped them recruit better in the Northeast. And obviously hiring Danny Hurley, who's been a winner at every stop, has facilitated that growth. But people talk about them getting in the Big 12 because of football or doing something. I would do nothing because of football up there. I would send football to the MAC with UMass. and continue on with what they're doing because that getting back in the Big East propelled men's basketball back to the top.
Gamble. It seats 9,982.
Yeah, I mean, again, no disrespect to that venue. First off, I mean, Rupp seats 20. I've been to the Dean Dome. That's got to be close, 18. Cameron is small, but Cameron gets love like you wouldn't believe from anybody who's ever done a game there. And Allen Fieldhouse is, as far as I'm concerned, as good as it gets. You don't get that Stores, Connecticut.
So what's Allen Field? I think Allen Fieldhouse 16,000 somewhere in there.
Something like that. Cameron, the games I've called at Cameron, they put you up in the crow's nest. You have to climb a ladder. I had a 6'9" analyst one time. I felt really bad for him. You got to climb a ladder. You got to duck your head, and you are way up there.
And it's hot up there.
It's steaming hot up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Debbie Antonelli said it's a scorcher up there.
Absolutely. They never caved on that. They won't allow the announcers front court and center. I still loved it. I still loved every of those. I did about a handful of them. It's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
We got to hit a timeout.
Most important question for Derek Scott. You can ask him, Jamie. best Eddie Murphy movie. I'm going to submit my vote for 48 Hours. It's an oldie but a goodie and a classic. It's his first one. One vote for 48 Hours. And we'll see what Mr. Scott has to say about that.
We'll come back to the quarterback question with Mike as well. If you could start your team with any current SEC QB.
It's tease number two.
Would it be? Tease number two. We keep it moving here on ITG. the voice of the Gamecocks, Derek Scott, is up next.
Tartan Day South, built by Culpeper Wood, is the largest Tartan Day celebration in the Southeast. Friday, April the 5th, three great Celtic rock bands perform at the Lexington Amphitheater. Saturday, April 6th, it's the main event at the historic Columbia Speedway in Casey, featuring Highland Games, Celtic dance, music, and food, featuring exhibits like sheepdog herding, birds of prey, and classic British cars at the largest Tartan Day celebration in the Southeast. Get your tickets now at TartanDaySouth.com.
Down here in the South, we don't always see eye to eye. While our taste in college football teams, or what sauce, if any, goes best on a rack of ribs, or what to mix with our Dixie vodka might be up for debate, we can all agree there's nothing better than a Southern tailgate. And like our favorite college teams, our ingredients come from small towns and big cities. They're grown in Southern soil, are crafted by Southern hands, and proudly represent the South in our backyard and beyond. So raise a glass of Dixie Southern Vodka to celebrate being made in America and raised in the South.
The season rolls on at Love Chevy, where the inventory is overflowing and the deals are in full bloom. Rev up your season with Love's exclusive specials on Suburbans, Tahoes, Silverados, Trailblazers, and the ever-popular Chevy Trax. They're hard to find. At Love Chevy, get behind the wheel and feel the possibilities. New adventures, new destinations, just you and the open road. Act now for Springtacular Savings at Love Chevrolet. The best selection of new Chevys. The lowest price, guaranteed. The other dealers upsell, overcharge, and will say most anything to get the sale. At Love Chevy, satisfied customers say it all. Things like helpful, knowledgeable, honest, and fun. Your trusted hometown Chevy dealer since 1961. I-26 at Harbison and at lovechevy.com. Together, let's drive.
That's the power of
Hey Gamecock fans, this is Roman Kimball with South Carolina Baseball. My friends over at Electric Bikes of Charleston have the largest selection of e-bikes in South Carolina. You can cruise up to high speeds of 28 miles per hour, which is about 70 miles an hour slower than my fastball. Stay in shape and enjoy your life with an electric bike from Electric Bikes of Charleston, where buyers come from all across South Carolina. Visit electricbikescharleston.com. See you at the ballpark and go Gamecocks.
Hey Gamecock Nation, my name is Kyle, longtime listener of the show and avid golfer. I wanted to take my game to the next level, but let's face it, golf is a hard game to learn on your own. I heard the ad from McKellar Enterprises and reached out to the owner and former Gamecock golfer, Meredith Taylor. In just 2 months of working with Meredith, I shot my lowest round ever and I've never felt more confident in my golf. So if you're looking to take your game to the next level, go to McKellarEnterprises.org and book your lesson today with former Gamecock golfer, Meredith Taylor. Go Gamecocks.